You ever laid in bed when you woke up and thank God for the day? Say, this is great. You know, I woke up before my alarm went off, and I'm laying here, and Lord, what a wonderful day it is. And you figure it's about time to roll over and push the button on the alarm, and you look, and it's flashing 12. You have no idea what time it is, but you figure, I'm late. Whatever I'm doing, I'm late. So you hop out of bed, you go down, you get dressed, you pour your bowl of cereal because you don't have time for something else, and you grab something out of the refrigerator and pour it on the cereal, and it's orange juice. And it's got you so shook up that when you pick up your cup of coffee, you manage to spill it everywhere. And then you realize, I was just dreaming. I'm retired. I don't worry about the alarm clock anymore. But sometimes our lives seem to be bound by storms around us when everything seems to go bad. Sometimes to us, it feels like a mighty thunderstorm. And maybe just a little bit less than that. Today we're going to be taking a couple minutes looking at when Jesus was sleeping, looking at Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. And let's stand together and honor God's word as we read it. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat, so it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drowned?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." May God bless the reading of his word. You may be seated. Where were they? They were on the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee is about 13 miles long, about 8 miles wide. It's fairly shallow, and it averages about 80 feet in deep in depth. But there's 1,500 foot high hills on the west side, the hills of Galilee, and on the east side there's the 3,300 foot mountains of Gilead. So it has a tendency to get a wind tunnel coming through there. When the wind picks up, if there's what looks like a little storm on the shore, by the time the wind funnels through there, the waves can pick up pretty big. You ever sometimes been in a big city where there's a storm and you can feel the wind whistling through the tall buildings? That's what we've got here. Sometimes a scary place to be. Now, it also says they were in a boat. This is about probably what the boat looked like. This was one that was recovered from the Sea of Galilee of that era. Probably 20 to 30 feet long. Now, how many people are in that boat? It's 20 to 30 feet long. 13. Yeah, that's a crowd that are in there. So you didn't have very much freeboard to begin with, and suddenly you got a crowd of people in there. And even though you've got some experienced fishermen, when you have a whole lot of people in a boat, you don't have much freeboard. Things can get really scary really fast. So what was the disciples' reaction to the storm? The first thing we know is they had panic. Now, why in the world would they panic? I mean, some of these are experienced fishermen. Well, maybe they panicked because they had some landlubbers in there too. We don't know what they're going to do in this storm. But also they would have panicked because normally in a fishing boat like that, you would have had two or three men. Period. And now you got 13. But what were they doing? They were doing just what Jesus asked them to do. Do you ever feel like that you've been in a panic when you've done exactly what Jesus told you to do and it didn't come out like you expected? Of course not, right? But what did they do? I'm sure they tried everything else. You know, let's see if we can bail. And this was long before the convenient plastic milk cartons that you could have and scoop out quickly. They were light, carry along. But they would bail, and it looks like it wasn't quite enough. What did they do as a last resort? They called Jesus. Tried everything else first. Now, obviously, we never do that kind of thing, do we? I mean, don't we? If things do not go as we had planned, you know, we try, well, let's get a self-help book on that. See if it'll work better. Maybe I just haven't prayed enough. Or maybe I wasn't in the right position. Or maybe I wasn't using the right language. I mean, maybe I'll step on one or two toes there, but God does recognize language other than just thou and thee. Sometimes, we've got to talk holy, otherwise it doesn't work, right? But they tried everything else. Finally, they called Jesus. So they panicked first, and then even in their panic, what happened? Who were they worried about? Themselves. They were worried about their own safety. Don't you care that we're going to drown? I'm not worried about what happens to you, but I'm worried about what happens to me. Don't you care about us? Have we ever asked Jesus that question? You know, things aren't going great. God, don't you care about what's happening in my life? Don't you understand what's happening here? So they were panicked. They were selfish. And, you know, selfishness is natural. We have to be taught to share. You know, ask any two-year-old, and what is their first response? Mine. Oh, yeah. And in fact, I remember seeing some funny videos that showed where there were some cookies that were being shared between brothers, twins. And when one of them got the cookie, the other one cried, and vice versa. And if you break the cookie in half, they both cry because somebody else got some of the other cookie. The disciples, they panicked, they were selfish, they were fearful. Why in the world should they be fearful? Some of these were experienced fishermen. Yeah, you got too many people in the boat. And maybe they were worried, I don't know what's going to happen with this guy next to me. You know, James, John, I know what I'm doing. But I'm not real sure about Matthew here. I mean, this guy's a landlubber. He collected taxes, so maybe I just kind of let him go anyway. Because I know Jesus called him. But let's face it. I had an uncle who worked for many years. He just said he worked for the U.S. government. People dove into what he was doing, he said, well, I do accounting work for the U.S. government. That's fine. Actually, he worked for the IRS. and people were worried about what was going on. I mean, let's face it, the IRS does not have the best reputation. They seem to like money. But what was Jesus' reaction to this same storm? I mean, he's in the same place. He's sleeping, and suddenly he's jostled awake. What happens? He was calm about it. He didn't say, oh, no, what am I going to do? This is terrible. He had set the course. He said, go on over to the other side. And he was confident in their ability, so he lay down and took a nap. And even when the rocking started getting worse and the storm getting worse, it didn't bother him. Why would that storm not bother him? He knew who was in charge. He wasn't worried about it. He wasn't moved by the frenzy of events around him. Are we sometimes moved by the frenzy of events around us? Everything is getting frazzled. We got to do something. Sometimes we don't need to do something. Sometimes what we need to do is just calm down, relax. But not only was Jesus calm, he was caring. How was he caring in there? He heard the prayer, you know, the jostling of his people. He said, okay. He met their concerns. He knew that they were scared. And he said, all right. These people are scared of the storm. I can handle it. I can take care of their fear. He told the wind and the waves to be calm. All it took was just a spoken word. He was present with them in the storm. He was there too. His physical risk was the same as theirs, but he wasn't worried about his own physical safety because he knew who he was in charge. And in fact, he asked the disciples, why are you afraid? I'm with you. I have walked with you for years. You've heard what I've had to say. You've seen the miracles. And you still don't get it, do you? Do we sometimes not get it? In fact, he used this. He was calm. He was caring. He used it as a teaching moment. Do sometimes we do that with our children, use things as a teaching moment? To say, this is what happened. He wanted them to know that God was still in charge. Even with the storm going on around him, that God was still in charge, and then also he was still with them. He hadn't deserted them. He still cared what was happening. Well, how does all this come to us anyway? I mean, this was a couple thousand years ago. You got a dozen people in a rickety boat in the midst of a storm, and Jesus speaks and calms them. One of the things that's important for us, Jesus hears our prayers. Now, just because Jesus hears our prayer, does that mean that he's always going to agree with what we're asking for? I firmly believe that God hears all of our prayers, and no prayer is unanswered. Sometimes he says yes. Sometimes he says no. Sometimes he says, are you kidding me? Do you really think that's such a good idea? You know, it's like what we tell our 16-year-old son when he wants that Ferrari. Are you kidding me? You're going to get that beater that I've been saving for you. And that I don't have to worry about you speeding because the fastest it's going to go is 45 miles an hour. Downhill with a tailwind. Jesus always hears our prayers, without a doubt. and he chooses how to answer. And sometimes it's a yes, but not now. Sometimes it's a no because you don't need it. You don't know what you're asking for. And sometimes it's a yes, thank you for asking. But sometimes we don't expect an answer, do we? There's a story told. One summer, a drought threatened a crop in a small town in the Midwest. And on a hot and dry Sunday, the village pastor told his congregation, "There isn't anything that can save us except God bringing rain. You need to pray for rain." Now, I know it's important that we get rain at the right time. Carol can tell us about the nightmare stories, I'm sure, about we need rain, but we don't need 5 inches 2 days before the harvest. But the preacher told his folks, go home and pray for rain. Pray earnestly for rain. So the people did as they were told and returned to the church the following Sunday. But as soon as the pastor saw him, he was very upset with him. He said, "We can't worship today because you don't believe." He said, "What? We did exactly what you told us to. We prayed for rain." "Then where are your umbrellas? You didn't have the faith to believe that God would answer. You didn't come prepared for the rain. You figured, yeah, I'm going to pray for rain, but it probably won't rain, so I don't need an umbrella." If you don't have an umbrella when you pray for rain, you don't really think it's going to rain. You got to be prepared for that. When you're praying, we're told we need to believe that God's going to answer. Jesus hears our prayers. Jesus knows our storms and still cares about it. Psalm 55:22 tells us to cast your cares upon the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous fall. Nahum 1:7, the Lord is good, a refuge in times of trouble. He cares for those who trusted him. 1 Peter 5:7, cast all your cares on him, all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Now, just going back to when we had kids, did sometimes we let them fail because they needed to? Did it mean we didn't care about them? Or did it mean we did care about them because we wanted them to learn? We wanted them to grow. We wanted them to mature. You know, what happens to the six-year-old who throws temper tantrums and has never any consequences for his poor behavior? He ends up becoming the 16-year-old delinquent and the 21-year-old prison inmate where there's no consequences. We as parents care. Sometimes there's consequences. And even though they may beg us, "Oh, please, save us for what I've done," sometimes we as parents, we got to say, "You did it. I warned you. It still happened. You got it." But Jesus knows our storms and our cares. There's a story about a child who's flying on a flight unaccompanied. And we used to do that with our grandsons. Basically what we would do, we would check them into the airport like luggage. They would put a tag on them. And they would be attached to a person until they got to the plane. And then they'd be, you know, picked up by one of the stewards or stewardesses and told where to sit, and they would be there, and they would be the last one off the plane being accompanied by the person, and then it was a hand-to-hand handoff until they got to the parent that was assigned to pick them up. But there was a child like this that was sitting on the plane, and it was a bumpy ride, going around thunderstorms and everything else. And the guy sitting next to the little kid was kind of wondering, hey, aren't you scared? You know, because it's kind of rocking and bumping and everything else. His kid said, no, I'm not scared at all. My dad's the pilot. It'll be okay. It may be bumpy, but he'll get me home. God's our pilot. He'll get us home. Jesus hears our prayers. Jesus knows our storms and cares. But probably most important out of all that, Jesus is with us in the storm. He was with him in the boat. He knew exactly what was going on. The storms that we see as devastating, from God's perspective, may just be sort of a minor blip. The storms in our lives are sometimes like the storms in the life of a 14-year-old girl. You know, 14-year-old girls have a tendency to be able to go from calm and collective to total maniac in 1/50th of a second, as the hormones kick in and the world is going to fall apart because I don't have the right color of top to wear when I'm going out. Sometimes that's the way our, what we consider is a major problem, can look in God's eyes. Like, wait a minute, it's not that big of a deal if you just let me handle it. You're making too much of it. Deuteronomy 31:8 tells us, the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. And in fact, what promise did Jesus give his disciples and us immediately before his ascension? He said, surely I'm with you always, even to the very end of the world. Jesus is with us. He knows what's happening. And it's okay. Now, some of us might say, well, you know, this is so bad, it might kill me. And we say, okay, let's see here. I'm missing out an opportunity to be with the Lord forever. I guess I want to avoid that. I want to avoid going to the unknown. Well, Jesus has already been there. And it's okay. Sure, people will miss us. But whether we're alive or whether we're not, we're still in God's hands. And it's all okay. If you're one of his, you're in his hands. Jesus asks us to just trust him with all we have and all we are and all we ever will be. And he'll take care of us. We say, well, I'm too bad. Nope. There is no such thing as too bad, because Jesus can forgive it all and will forgive it all. Our sin is very much like the writing on a whiteboard. Once it's erased and clean, it's as if it was never there. It's all gone. He gives us the opportunity to start all over. If you've never done that, that's an opportunity today for you to say, Lord, I trust you. Come into my life, clean me up, and honor your promise to be with me every day from here on out. And you know what? He'll do it. He was in the boat, and he'll be in the boat with us.